WLP Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on the dial, and live streaming from WCOMFM.org. Here's a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. From Main Street to Wall Street, the issues impacting your business, we're talking leadership, technology, politics, regulation, and success stories that inspire. It's time to focus on business. I'm your host, author, speaker, entrepreneur, and business consultant, Lee Strickland. I'm the CEO of Focus Resources and 2S Innovations and founder of the Network for Business Growth. I've also created the Core Business Transformation System. And now today's program.
Focus. Well, on today's program, we have one returning guest, John Demers. We've known him being on the show about the Rusty Bucket Kits. And my new guest is Mark Easley, Sr., an angel investor, advisor to startups here in the Triangle. And our topic today is crowdfunding and the NC PACES Act that was just signed into law. And before we get into the topic and get these guys sharing their stories of how this law, this act came to pass over the past 3.5 years getting it passed, let me tell you a little bit about them. John has been on the show previously, as I said, talking about the Rusty Bucket Kids. He is an award-winning actor. He's been in film, TV, new media producer. He's a media futurist. All in the past 23 years, he has made a huge impact on our community for his activities in the film industry. He works in front of the camera and behind the camera. He does indie feature films, TV, and he is included among those, Among the Brothers, Gods and Generals, 3 seasons of The West Wing, Homicide Hunter. I love that show. And many more. John also has done a number of national TV commercials for NASCAR and other branded products. He does like sneaking off and doing live theater, too. So he's done a few shows like Harvey with Eleanor Donahue, To Kill a Mockingbird with Johnny Whitaker, Fiddler on the Roof with Paul Sorvino, The Sound of the Music with the Real Von Trapp Family Singers. And John has built a professional career doing voiceovers in the studio. He's done all kinds of different things for us in this community, the International Film Festival out of Apex. He volunteers as a faculty advisor at the Living Arts College School of Communications Arts, and so much more. I could go on forever. And then my second guest is Mark Easley. He is a startup advisor and angel investor here in the RTP area, and he has spent 20-plus years in technology, in engineering, marketing, sales, and as an executive management in semiconductor industry in Silicon Valley. And he has been on the executive board of the Raleigh-Durham Area Angel Investor Group and is a member of the Council for Entrepreneurial Development. He is a team leader that advocates for the NC PACES Act, which was the crowdfunding bill that was signed into law finally in July of this year. And so, both of you, welcome to the show.
Hi, Lee. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Lee.
It has been a long time coming for those of us in the business community to get this NC PACES Act passed. And let's explain to the audience just what the act is, what it does, and the path that it took to actually getting it passed.
Mark? Mr. Mark,
okay,
please
sure.
Speak.
Basically, it's what's called a crowdfunding exemption. And where it came from is about 4 years ago, there was a federal law called the Jobs Act that was designed to help small businesses get funding. After the 2008 banking collapse, basically they put in all these new regulations and none of the small businesses could get loans anymore. So it's actually one of our congressmen here in North Carolina, Congressman McHenry, who came up with the idea of this Jobs Act at the federal level. And the idea was basically to write an exemption to all those rules that was very simple, which would allow small businesses and startups to raise a small amount of money to get going, get off the ground. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, amounts up to $1-2 million, that kind of a range.
Right.
And then the other thing that it did, though, very interesting, was it allowed everybody to invest, not just institutional investors and angel investors and rich guys.
High net worth individuals.
Accredited investors.
Accredited investors, like to say. It would allow anybody to invest in these small businesses with certain limits applied by the law and the rule. So that's where it all started. Of course, in Washington, D.C., nothing's simple or cheap. It's incredibly expensive. And when they finally issued the rules about this law, after it passed really quickly and easily through the whole Congress and was signed by President Obama.
And we're supposed to have rules within 90 days of that.
Yeah, we're supposed to have rules in 90 days. Actually, about 4 years later, they came out with 865 pages of rules around this.
Only 865?
Yeah.
It was just past June.
And this is for a company that's trying to raise $100,000 to open up a new, barbershop or something.
Right.
So we all realized this early on, a lot of us who are kind of tracking the industry, and we started saying what we need to do is we can do this at the state level instead, basically come up with the same idea, but we can make it a lot simpler, easier, cheaper, faster, and do it all through the state regulators instead of through Washington, D.C.
Right.
And Georgia was actually the first state to actually do it, and they did it without even writing a law. Their regulators just said, well, we can do this. And they wrote about a 3-page set of rules of how to do it and started doing it. And so that's
when you thought it would go much quicker at the state level.
We thought it would go much quicker at the state level. So that's when I got involved with it. It was 3.5 years ago. I came up with the idea that we should do it. It turned out my state representative was Representative Tom Murray, happened to be down in the Cary area. He happened to be the Commerce Committee chairman. So he's the perfect guy to bring
right.
this kind of thing to. So I called Tom and asked him if he wanted to discuss this idea. Very interesting. He himself is a small businessman. He's a pharmacist, besides
right.
being in the state legislature at the time. And he had been through the process of having to go visit almost 20 banks trying to get a loan. He knew what we were talking about. So
I think every small business owner knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think so. So he thought it was well worth trying. So off he went, and he did a great job along with our Secretary of State Securities Division leader.
Elaine Marshall. Yep.
Yeah, Elaine Marshall.
David Massey.
David Massey is the head of the Securities Division downtown. Tom Murray and David basically wrote the piece of legislation that was defined this crowdfunding exemption, which we called the NC Jobs Act at the time, and later evolved to NC PACES.
Well, and the exemption essentially says you don't have to register a full-blown securities offering in the state under the high net worth accredited investor requirements that were what every tech company in the area has had to jump through to even
right.
do their initial seed rounds and angel rounds.
That's right.
So that it says that you're going to have to follow some rules, but there aren't those full registration of securities rules that you're going to have to follow. This bill sets the rules for the parameters of how to do crowdfunding.
That's right. And for the small business person, as Mark pointed out, 2008-09, that, people who were paying their bank note on their inventory loan every time, not later, whatever, were being told we're not renewing the loan.
Right.
I mean, and you sit there and you really scratch your head because you're not in a failing business. It's not like, well, hey, you've been missing payments. And it's a thriving, maybe be it small, growing business as the community grows.
Right.
I think of Apex because of the growth. So some of the small businesses in town have had some modest growth. But you still have to fund inventory, et cetera.
You fund the timing differences. Essentially what every small business wants to do. It's my cash conversion cycle says it's going to take me 180 days, but I need cash in 90 days. And I'm going to a bank or other lender to say, help me with that working capital.
And I have a proven track record already.
I'm profitable. I can make the payments. Basically, yep. If you looked at my credit worthiness, it was great. But the banks were saying no. I mean, I have banker friends now that even now they say they have to have connections with alternative lenders for their clients because even if they're not a risk and meet all the criteria, the banks are still saying no
to the loans.
That's the problem for businesses that have growth opportunities either in adjacent markets, their current market, they've come up with a new product. I mean, I'm running a company for one of my clients, an inventor. And it's just been bootstrapping it along because he didn't meet the criteria historically to be able to raise funds in the traditional ways or go to a bank and say, because you have no sales.
Right.
It's a brand new product.
Right.
And so we've bootstrapped patent costs. We've bootstrapped the licensing deals and all of that kind of stuff. Where this comes in, he can now take it to the crowdfunding marketplace. And
it's a game changer.
Right.
It's a game changer.
It's totally a game changer, yeah.
So let's talk about some of the things that in the NC PACES Act actually says and what that means for all the companies that are out there. So what is it doing and how is it working and how can our listeners use it for their businesses?
Yeah, I always start this conversation around the basic idea of crowdfunding, because when you say that word, something different pops into everybody's mind.
Right.
Okay, so everybody's familiar with some pieces of crowdfunding, probably Kickstarter, Indiegogo.
GoFundMe.
Those donation and rewards-based crowdfunding, we call it, is what everybody's familiar with. And by the way, small businesses use those too all the time. As a matter of fact, here in the Triangle, our game companies, which we have a lot, fund their new games constantly on Kickstarter by just pre-selling the game.
Right.
Right? And then they take the money on the pre-sales and go make it.
Yep.
It's a great way to do business. It's got nothing to do with, the financials of the company in terms of equity or loans or any of that stuff. It's just another way to raise some money. Second one a lot of people have heard of is peer-to-peer lending, where people just get loans, individuals get loans, and those are a lot of times for credit card debt, for college loans, stuff like that, debt programs that people have, and they want to pay those off, so they go on the peer-to-peer lending sites like LendingClub, and they borrow money, and that's exploded in the last few years. Real estate is another area where it's really taken off. So people are funding all sorts of real estate projects online and using the crowdfunding process to do that. But the one we're talking about with PACES, the PACES Act, is what we call investment crowdfunding. That is where you're actually buying a piece of the company, or you're acting at like a financial institution, like a bank, where you're actually making a loan to the company. And that's, of course, an extremely heavily regulated piece of our financial industry, and both at the federal level and the state levels. So as soon as you talk about what's called investment crowdfunding, that's when the regulations kick in, and that's why we had to make a new law and have the regulators get involved and define everything that's going to be allowed and not allowed, and that's where the PACES Act comes in.
So is it easier to talk about what's allowed in the PACES Act or start with what's not allowed?
Probably what's allowed.
You're
allowed to raise up to $2 million with the PACES Act, and that's per year. So companies can come back and have multiple raises with that.
So let's say we have a five-year plan. We need $10 million. We could raise it each year to $2 million. Is it a calendar year? It's a calendar year.
It's a calendar year, okay. Yeah.
And you mentioned the $2 million would be with reviewed or audited financials.
That's with reviewed or audited
financials. The million you don't.
Okay. Yeah, up to a million, you just need financial reports, but you don't have to be reviewed or audited. You register with the state that you're going to do one of these offerings. You can do it online on a platform, but you don't have to. You can raise money directly yourself if you've got a good customer base or a good group of people that might want to help you. You can appeal directly to them over the internet, through email, and this is probably the biggest thing about the whole crowdfunding and Jobs Act concept is that before it was completely illegal to promote anything. You couldn't even tell anybody I'm raising money unless you had a personal face-to-face meeting.
Right.
Lawyers wouldn't even want you to get any press coverage during the window, even if you didn't discuss it. They just didn't want anything.
Yeah.
Safe harbor.
They're risk averse. But, I mean, with this act now, it's like we were talking a little bit off air. You could literally do a radio show. I could host it. And we could have the shows come on, 15 minutes, spotlight your concept, your product.
Yes.
Talk about your business, why it's there, give a website, and go.
Yep.
Yep.
That's no longer illegal.
That's no longer illegal.
In this state.
Well, the rule, I think, at the moment it still might be. The rules are coming out, and I think it's, the beginning of 2017 we can do it. But it's coming. It's passed unanimously.
The law's been passed. We're waiting for the regulators to finish all the details.
Well, one of the local attorneys was on and talked about it a little bit, and he said, yes, people could now go on the radio.
Well, yeah, you can talk about it. You certainly can. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so it's, we have more avenues. We can social media. We can Facebook it. We can Tumblr it. We can Snapchat it. We can whatever we want to do with it. We can spread the word through those relationships. You could stand up in your Rotary Club meeting and do it.
It is amazing the places you can go now and harvest leads and opportunity.
Yeah, so the types of things people will use, will raise money on, basically, I think it's going to be three things at the business.
Three categories.
One will be equity raises. This is like the traditional startup thing where they're selling stock in
your seed round.
In the company for your seed round. Okay. This is early stage, and seed is where I think it's going to be the most popular.
Oh, yeah.
And in those cases, you're going to put together what looks like a normal, what we call a 506B or 506C type of a offering with your lawyers. And sell.
The lawyers are always going to be in there no matter what.
Lawyers are always in there. You can't get away from them when you talk about regulated securities. So you put together an offering with your lawyer, and then the difference being if it's a 506C style, you can promote it on all the channels we've been talking about. If it's a 506B file style, you can also promote it, but it has to be a private listing where only certain people can get access to it.
Accredited investors.
Accredited investors and all that. So anyway, so one is selling equity in your company. Now, for tech startups and some companies, that makes sense. But for small business, it never does because you're not really building equity. You're doing a cash flow business, right?
Right.
So small businesses need loans. And a couple of types I think will be popular will be convertible debt loans,
right,
where you loan the company some money now and you hope that that company in the future will have some kind of an exit event. It'll be maybe bought by a larger company or bought by a chain or something like that, at which point you can convert that loan into stock in the company and then sell the stock. That's how the investor recovers. And the third one I think they'll be popular will be just straight loans, mostly, my guess, revenue loans, revenue share loans, where you've got a good cash flow business like you were talking about earlier, where everything's working. You just need to fund 90 days at a time of inventory and other activities that you do. And so you just guarantee to pay the loan back out of your certain percentage of your revenues. And so from an investor's point of view, it's like giving you a loan, but my interest rates are a lot better than I'm getting it, which is zero at a bank or anyplace else
now. Your cash is not getting anything.
Yeah.
Well, I've mentioned this on the air before. It's like one of my clients bought a new building, and he had to put the deposits down for the utilities and realized you get 8% on your deposit for the utilities. So he put $10,000 down on a deposit because they said that he could get the difference back.
Oh,
that's
really
pretty shrewd.
Now the utility companies are going to probably change around. I was like, you did what? He goes, I can get 8%.
Anyway, utility company.
Yeah. So it was kind of an interesting thing. I was like, well, he goes, I'm getting nothing in the bank.
Yeah.
But that's true. We see these rates, or people, we call them sometimes the payday type lenders, that are the businesses end up going to those alternative funders and are paying 14, 20, 25% interest.
It's expensive.
One client had turned out when I came in, they had 104% interest on the loan and hadn't realized it. They were paying like 36 cents a payment on the principal. They would never have paid it off. But in this state, there are no limits on interest rates for commercial loans.
I know.
And so this gets them out of that trap of, I have a really great business. I don't have to bankrupt the business in order to grow because of the lending rates.
Right.
So I can come out, I can do crowdfunding.
Yeah.
Maybe I need an expansion. Maybe I need more inventory. Maybe I'm opening a second location. Those are the types of things.
Or in many instances, and I mean, I think of the Rusty Bucket Shop, the namesake for our TV show. I can say this because I've spoken with Pam and Mac, the owners. But they ran into this problem. All of a sudden, the bank said no. And, I mean, he ran around all the banks. They're paying their bills. That's not the problem.
No.
They just lost their loan for inventory. And they're a cyclical business, and they need those advances to bring in the Christmas, to bring in Halloween and Thanksgiving and spring and Easter. Small businesses need this. And so here is a prime example where you've been in business for, I guess they've been around 10, 11, 12 years, best retail store in the country for small business. They've won awards, Apex. But they can't get a loan. Here's where they can now go to their customers. And, I think their email list is several thousand long.
Right.
And we all know when we have a business that's doing well, it's like church. There's always someone in a church that's got a lot of wealth.
Right.
And so when that crisis hits, there's someone there that says, well, I can cover while we figure out, Well, you're going to have someone that's a customer that does have wealth that if they know about the opportunity, because now it's not really a problem, it's an opportunity.
And there's a mechanism
Right. There's a mechanism now
because a lot of times people have the opportunity, but those high net worth individuals also have someone usually helping manage their portfolio that says,
right,
we can't do this because it's not covered or hurt. This isn't allowed. You can give them a gift. You can make them a loan, but only in certain terms. You can only do certain things.
And now they're able to take that high-risk money, the money is, well, look, if you want to go golfing, you can go golf. Whatever you want to do with this, you can. It's not really tied in. So if they want to put $5,000 into something or $10,000, depending on the network, they can, and they're not sort of stuck in that squeeze of you've just gone up against the lawyers and the accountant and the bean counters that he's paying money for. And the reality is you're wanting to get funds from them for your business that truly, if you had to use the old system and get a lawyer and put out between $15,000 and $30,000 to get the offering, it's like, that's all I want. That's all I need is $30,000. So this opportunity now comes around and creates the situation where a small business now can work with their existing customer base to a large degree to fund their operations.
Right.
Using the instruments that you talked about.
Well, and you're also able to reach many businesses today have relationships that extend beyond the geographic location they're in. So now this also is that mechanism. If you have a customer in Singapore, nothing stops that customer in Singapore from hitting the website.
I got to talk about that point.
Yes, I was just going to say, you need to address that, Mark.
So we were talking a little bit earlier about some of the things you can't do.
Right.
Well, that's one of them.
Okay.
So under the PACES Act, if you're using a state exemption, you have to be a North Carolina company.
Right.
You have to be incorporated here.
Right.
And your investors have to be North Carolina residents.
All right.
So part of your screening process is...
So it's truly not just them make a $10 donation.
Right.
In a traditional sense of a GoFundMe or whatever, there are restrictions when you're exchanging securities.
Yes, and there's a reason why for that. And the reason that the whole law can exist is because if you make those two restrictions, the SEC is no longer the regulator.
Right.
Our state guys are the regulator, and now we can do it under our own rules. Now, you still got to follow the general SEC stuff,
right,
and don't be a crook and don't do any nasty.
Bad actors. I'm a good actor. Work with actors.
Different kind of actor.
Right.
but it is because it's like, something everyone needs to realize is that you have a responsibility, and we've talked about this off air, of complying with the rules.
Right.
So when you do a traditional crowdfunding, like if the station did a crowdfunding here, anybody from anywhere in the world could hit $10, could hit $100.
For perk or rewards. Right.
For perk or rewards.
Right.
But in this instance of what you guys are talking about are strictly there's some kind of security exchange.
Yes.
In this bill.
Yes.
So we're not talking about all types of crowdfunding.
This is equity.
We're talking about someone in the organization has to be on the hook to do the due diligence.
That's exactly right. And that's why you never always never get rid of the lawyers when you're talking about loans and securities, unfortunately. But it's simple enough. It's a lot more cost effective than it would be otherwise to do.
I think that's the point. When I said $15,000 to $30,000, which I know because I've been there,
right,
it's not going to be that way. I know in talking like with Benji Jones and a few other attorneys, they were like, they've said it publicly and in private, this will streamline that to the point where it's, in some ways, the lawyers are thinking there'll be some volume business,
right,
because there'll be a lot of cookie cutter here. You know, this is a fairly simple process. This law is not complicated.
And to excuse the expression for the lawyers that are listening, this is kind of like a copy and paste, a find and replace. Here's the format. You're raising authority. It's $1,500 for us to go through and customize this template for your business, or it's $3,000 or whatever.
Right. I mean, there's still some dollars, but you're not going to be going, oh, my gosh, my bill is what I wanted to raise.
So someone can't, I'm presuming, open their own website, set this up and saying, I'm crowdfunding. I'll send you the security. I'll do this. It all has to have something saying it's registered somewhere for the securities offering.
Right.
Or the appropriate exemption clauses that say we're exempt from the 1933 Securities Act or whatever. I'm sure there's language that will be in the final rules that you're going to need. I think one of the other things, and this is important, like Mark said, by the way, disclaimer, I'm not a lawyer, but I've played one on television and feature films. Same thing with Mark. But in a sense, with this type of legislation, these reporting requirements, like for instance, you're going to have a quarterly report that's still due to your stakeholders, whether they be whatever type of vehicle they've used. So there's still going to be reporting requirements. This still has to be treated like a business, which becomes tough in my particular industry. I mean,
in
motion picture and film.
And
a lot of industries. But I work with a lot of creative people that are very really on top of their creative game. But when it comes to the business side of my industry, here in North Carolina, it has not been as effective or strong. In other words, there's a lot of creative people that will go out and shoot a film or shoot something, and the intellectual property rights are not tight. And so you end up with something that you go, hey, this looks great, but then you realize on paper there's nothing really there. And so you talk to that really great creative person that had these great ideas, and you say, hey, I'll come do the business side.
Right.
And they get lost because it's like, well, I don't want to do that, or I don't want to give up control. And it's like, well, it's a measured control. As long as certain things are happening, you don't have to worry. But if there are things that aren't happening, yes, there are people now that have to look out for the stakeholders.
I know when I get the calls from somebody wanting to start their own music company in Nashville, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, these are the things that you're going to have to do. Your work is automatically copyrighted, but you need to register the copyright. So there's going to be this process you have to do.
Right.
Are you having investors? If so, that means all those copyrights have to reside within the corporation that you've created. And it's the assignment of things and those kind of things that you go through that. And they're like, but I don't want to do that. Well, that's the business side. So you either hire someone to do the business side, or you don't do the business in that way.
Well, it's the same thing with crowdfunding. Whether you're doing them for perk or rewards, or we're going to do them for equity, you should really plan your crowdfunding campaign. That's another thing that I see as shortfalls. Someone will just want to raise, you know, $10,000 or $20,000, and they put the campaign up, and they don't understand why nobody's giving, but they've at the same time not really prepared for the launch of it. You know, every campaign I've worked on, I've known for where 10 to 20% of the money was coming from the day it launches, or
right.
within a few days.
Well,
I get commitments. I talk to people.
You don't plant seeds without tilling the ground.
Exactly. You prepare. You know, prior proper planning prevents problems for producers.
And only an actor could say that with three times fast.
That's right. That's right.
But you're sitting there, and that's things that overlap this, and every aspect of the government is touching crowdfunding right now. The IRS is issuing letters on, okay, if it's a securities exchange, then it falls under one category.
Right.
Wrote an article on this. I think it's on the website. If it's a gift, mm-hmm. it falls under one category.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the part that you've neither given them securities, it's not a loan, it's not an exchange of any kind of value where they've gotten something back for it. Then that becomes income, and then it becomes taxable, and then you got to gross up the amount you got to raise, thinking of your legal fees, your registrations, the tax consequences, any of those kind of things. So when you say, I need to raise $100,000, I need to net $100,000 in this raise.
Right. I got to raise $120,000 because this is my cost to get there. Right.
Right. And so it's making those business realities and understanding it and sitting down with your accountant or your lawyer or your business advisors or your current investors and saying, this is what we're planning. Here's the plan. Here's the timeline up to this point. This is what we expect to net, and it's all or nothing, right? We're not necessarily doing tranches where we get
right.
part of the money.
And you're speaking now the language that most of the investors in this community are used to hearing. And again, coming from a film and television world, this isn't the language used. And I'm learning why, because if you understood how the money really is earned, because people are earning money in my
yes.
industry, then there would be a lot more people wanting to do it. The problem is most filmmakers, most artistic people that go, I'll bring together the camera people and the audio people, and maybe even legally they've got all the right contracts to have a good chain of title. The schools that teach motion picture production, filmmaking, television, whether they're at the technical community college level or you pay $300,000 to NYU or one of the colleges in California, they do not teach you the business of
the
this
medical,
business.
The medical schools don't.
They do
the
not.
Pharmaceutical schools don't. The chiropractic schools don't. The schools that are profession-oriented or creative-oriented do not include that part.
The business part. And that's so important. And that's what is so lacking. So I see all these wonderful creative opportunities out there because I'm a big believer in localized television. Now, I know for you radiophiles out there, you're getting real upset right now, but as you send in your emails, Lisa, don't worry about it. I'm only on for another few minutes. But the reality is with television, the opportunity for localized branded content is really there in the top 25 markets in this country, where Raleigh-Durham is in the top 25. And
it's the same for radio.
It is for radio, too.
Branded syndication
It's very true. But television was always harder because of production costs. In fairness, radio could localize a lot easier than television, which is why television got out of the business of making their own kid shows and their own shows. They just did news and went for syndication. Now, syndication is so expensive. I mean, Seinfeld's expensive in reruns. It really is. But the fact is now they can get really good quality content like my kid's show. I'm looking at a cop show. Right. I'm looking at some reality shows, a business show. There's other shows I'm looking at. And those can be localized and branded locally. And then with the success of those shows can be down-marketed. In other words, smaller markets can show it as original content. But then in larger markets, you can actually format sale those shows. You can take it to someone else's market. Say you could try that.
But on the creative end, too, for which is where a lot of this, I think, will come into play, is that we're also seeing this blending of TV things that are rebroadcast as just strictly radio or audio. Audio that has live TV streaming on the major syndicated programs and things like that. And so we're seeing this bleeding up because you don't go and do any kind of online fundraising without a well-produced video of who you are, what it means, succinct, put it together, professionally put together. And that's an investment.
It is. Having that type of relationship is important. Even though you can use tools that I carry around, like my iPhone 6 and some rigs and housing, and I can get good quality shots like we're doing here to put up later on Facebook, you have to be able to discern between when you need to use this tool versus I need to now have $15,000 worth of cameras and some lights or even more than that. You have to understand that particular industry. That's one of the reasons why I kind of like the position that I'm in. Having done the crowdfunding for equity under the federal legislation, it allowed me to talk about it everywhere. We just have restricted it to accredited investors only. We had a vetting process.
Right.
So we had to really cover that carefully. But it allowed me to see this does work. You could do this in a crowdfunding way. Now the opportunity and the way it works is even better because you have companies like Marluto Funds, which is sort of an online company that will sort of help in the vetting process as well as be sort of that, I don't know if they're actually a licensed broker-dealer, but they become that infrastructure. So if you're doing crowdfunding and you want to work with a third party to help clear some of that, you have them. All these opportunities are now coming into play. And on the business side, I've had the opportunity over the last several years to talk to more and more of the angel-type investors, the Marks of the world, about what are the needs? What do the investors look for? What is it we're not saying on our side of the funds in television and film so that you can understand how does the revenue work? How does the costs work? What language do we need to be speaking? And we're finding those bridging gaps to cover that language and explain better.
And it's something, I know when they first started doing the Shark Tank and all those kind of shows on TV, it was a good learning tool for me with my clients because we would be trying to get them to understand that when you get in front of the investors, you get one chance. You better know your numbers. You better know your concept. You better be able to communicate it. You better be able to think on your feet when they ask a question. And what was fun for that was to be some of the homework I would go is go on YouTube or go on TV, listen to the – and invariably they would come back and say, but, oh, that's not going to happen to me. I said, it will if you don't know your answers. If you can't talk to – the subject matter as to where are the revenues, where's your market, who's your competition. And if you ever say, Mark, you've probably heard this when you've had investor pitches, I only need 1% of the world and I'll be making billions. Well, 1% of the world is not your market, right? You know, and it's like, and so you still see that connection. But and that's what you've got to know. What are you putting up on the screen? Mm-hmm. What is that content? You have to have a plan. You have to be able to talk your numbers. None of that homework gets skipped over because you're going online.
In fact, it gets magnified. Here's what I always tell everybody. What you're trying to do is get an investment decision, whether that's an accredited investor or one of your customers, based on that profile that you have online. And the good news is we know how to do it because thousands of companies have already done it. You can look online and see what a good campaign looks like. What does a good profile look like? What does a good video look like? Not only that, you can search the ones that are in your industry trying to raise money for something very similar to what you're raising for. And you can look up the ones who raised $100,000, $200,000,
$300,000,
$500,000.
Right.
Yep. And now you got a good clone project to work on. But it's going to be... You'll see as you look at more and more of these, and I've looked at tons of them, exactly what you're saying is it's all there. So there's a video there. There's a slide deck there explaining your business model. There's a bunch of stuff about your team. There's things about your target markets. There's things about your product. What are you going to use the money for? What are the metrics you're going to measure? How are you going to get there? When are you going to do this quarter versus next quarter? And on and on and on. And one of the most important pieces that you're mentioning that you have to have is this list of FAQs that every investor is thinking about. And if you, the first few times through it, you are not going to have them all there.
You will, but, if they're my client, but I'm just kidding.
But you'll get the feedback. Talking to your advisors and your investors, they'll ask the questions, write them down, and answer them. And for me, a successful crowdfunding profile looks like when I got to the end, I understand what that company does.
Right.
I understand who they are. I understand what they're trying to do. And they've answered all my questions but two.
Right.
And those two have something to do with something I'm concerned
right.
about that maybe something else
It's specific to the investor.
It's specific to the investor.
And I tell my clients it's like that Pareto principle, right? 20% of the content is going to answer 80% of the questions.
Yeah.
And it's usually financial. It's where is your market? Do you understand it? Where's your competition? What are the risks? What are you going to use the money for? Why do you need that much? What, you know, what were your other things? If you already have investors, why aren't they not putting in more money? It's those dynamics that when you're sitting there and you're going through it. But I mean, some of my clients have come to me and said, oh, I was at this forum for, you know, people were going to raise it. And the guy told me I didn't need a business plan, not to worry about it. They never look at business plans. I said, no, you're not going to walk into an investor and hand him your business plan because he's not going to read it. But you better walk into that meeting and know the answer to everything that goes into a business plan, because that's what he's looking for you to present.
Yeah, that's right. So the good thing about crowdfunding from my point of view is it's kind of standardizing and making this process a lot more clear. Like you said, people don't learn this in school. Well, you can learn it online. There's a school online. You know, it's called crowdfunder.com. It's called AngelList. You know, it's mm-hmm. called these yep. sites where, A, they have a whole bunch of educational material up there on them to explain to you what you better do if you want to get any funding, and B, thousands of examples of how to do it. Nothing yep. could be better than that. So you got to do that work, though. And basically, if they're not doing that work, they're going to fail. Everybody knows it, so it's forcing them to do at least the minimal amount that's required.
Right. I mean, I've broken it down in my business working with the clients into two, what we call two cores. Core genesis, you got to have your concept, your opportunity, your resources, and the entity. How is that business going to operate, the model and stuff. And then as you're growing, you have to talk about your customers. You have to talk about how you're running the business, the operations, the results you're getting, and how you're executing. Those are the eight elements that every investor needs you to articulate on, to have the answers to be able to say, okay, if I'm giving you $100,000, what's it going to be used for?
Yeah.
Where am I going to exit? What's my return on it?
Right.
Why you and not this other guy?
That's right.
Because you have thousands of people knocking on your door as an investor saying, oh, no, it's me, you want to invest it. And it's about the team as much as it is about the product or the concept.
Yeah.
It's collaborative.
It depends. Now, things like the PACES Act are changing that a little bit, and here's why. It's a lot different decision when you're going to – you can invest much smaller amounts under these
right.
crowdfunding acts, either the federal regulation, you know, Title III they call it, or the state ones. One thing I wanted to mention – about your discussion earlier, John, was there's also something called the 80-80 rule, which we've got to be careful about what the state thinks.
Right.
You have to do 80% of your business in North Carolina also. So as a film company, as an example, if you're doing all this and all your investors are here and you're here, that's fine. But if you're selling everything to somebody in Amazon and all your money's coming from Washington State, you still can't do this. You have to be generating your revenues here.
So explain that a little bit more. So you're saying that 80% of your customers have to be in North Carolina.
80% of your customers and your revenues. It's
called
the 80-80 rule. So this is why it's going to tend to be better for small businesses rather than tech startups or somebody that's got a website that's selling all over the world. That's not going to be. They're going to want to go with the federal rules.
Because the majority of my clients, they want to be based in North Carolina doing business, but 80% of their, and with my business as a consultant, 80% of my revenues come from out of state.
Right.
I sit here and provide the services in North Carolina,
right.
but my customers are not in North
yeah.
Carolina.
The way it is right now, and actually we're working to change that piece of it, because that's, with nowadays with the internet, that's a stupid restriction. It's one of the old
yeah.
ones.
But, and it's also kind of hard, I mean, you're going to be sitting there and having to segregate and slice and dice your accounting to know
well,
on any given
maybe,
day the swing.
Maybe,
yeah.
but you know, they are, we've got a huge, gigantic economy in North Carolina that fits that criteria.
No.
Right. Every business you're looking at.
It's Main Street.
Fits that criteria, Main Street.
Right.
Which is why this thing eventually passed unanimously when we finally got it done. Because everybody in every small town in North Carolina, their small businesses need financing.
And they are not getting it.
And they're not getting it. And right. it's
or it's too costly if they can get it.
Right. Yeah, it's too costly.
It takes out all of their profit. And
That's right. That is exactly right.
Because a business that's making 4% profit and has to pay 14% interest, it's not going to compete.
Let me go a little bit higher level. So if you're a business, what do you want to do with investment crowdfunding in particular? You really got three ways to go right now. One is you can go with the federal crowdfunding type
stuff. The
federal
exemption, right.
And use the traditional way of doing it like John's done before where you go to accredited investors and all the lawyers and everybody knows how that works. It works well. But
it's a closed race.
It's a closed race. Now it just became this year legal this year to use what we call Title III, which is also a federal rule which allows anybody to invest. And we're just getting started with that one. It's pretty complicated and expensive, but it is legal now, and people are starting to do that. Or the third one is if you meet these restrictive criteria we're talking about, you can go with one of the state exemptions.
Right.
So
right.
part of the process for you and your advisors and your lawyer is which of those three paths makes sense for your type of business.
Right, because you have to sit down. You have to say, I'm growing my business. And let's say you've already grown beyond the geographic area. So now we know we're not going to do North Carolina's crowdfunding bill because all of our growth is going to come from outside of North Carolina.
Right.
So that moves us down to one of the Title III or the federal.
Unless you follow the rules. And in my industry, if you then licensed your film to a distributor in North Carolina that is a separate company. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but in my brief discussions with lawyers, it was kind of like we'd have to look at it. But if you're licensing to another company.
Because he's passing it through.
Right. That's another company. It's a different entity. They're going to license it to North Carolina stations. All these. They're going to go. But you're getting that one check from that one North Carolina company.
Because your customer is that distributor. It's not his distributor.
That's right.
Customers.
And then you have other distribution points in North Carolina you're self-distributing to. But that's your... That would be the only vehicle you would have.
I can hear the little
moment.
Peanut gallery of lawyers saying, okay, that's an exception as long as it's a third-party arms-length transaction. You don't have any investment in it.
Right.
They're going to put all those provisos there.
That would be the way to do it. Otherwise, as Mark said, you'd go with the federal.
Right.
There's still a way to do it.
It's your business plan. It's your team sitting down and strategically deciding which of these fits what I want my business to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then which investors you're actually looking for.
Right. You know, for so many of these Main Street businesses that you've got down here in Carrboro, Chapel Hill, Apex Carry, a lot of those small retail shops, the interstate legislation that the state, has passed and the rules are coming, it's going to work for them. Because in many ways, I think of some of the businesses I know in particular, they're clearly doing 80% of their business. I mean, they're a restaurant. They're in a downtown location. I don't think they're doing a lot of mail order,
So, unless they suddenly are selling their products on QVC, too, or something like that.
But that becomes one of those problems where that would be such volume, you'd pay for solving the problem.
Right.
You'd get legal in and you'd fix it. You really would.
But it is an interesting dynamic in that a lot in North Carolina, we have a lot of counties that do not have job opportunities. They don't have business growth on Main Street or even Wall Street businesses, right? And so the state has to be looking for a way to have Main Street grow in those more disadvantaged counties.
Right.
And so we're saying on Main Street, if you're going to sell local, that's one thing. And this gives them access to that.
Well, that's why
they have to stay. And we may not know this yet, but do we have to stay local once we've raised the funds? So at the time we raise the funds, 80%.
It's at the time you raise the funds. So next year you might turn into a gigantic internet smash.
Right.
And you won't be able to raise again using that method, but you can go on to the federal methods at that point.
And you wouldn't have done anything wrong.
And you wouldn't have done anything.
And that's it. So it's like if this year we're raising the funds to put infrastructure in.
Yeah.
But we know next year we're going to turn on out. Is that. If the plan is to actually know next year, we're going to turn on the web.
Again, not as a lawyer.
As it's currently written.
I can't answer the question because I'm not a lawyer. But that's the kind of things we have to sit down
and think about.
Well, don't worry. The regulators are going to...
I know. That's what I mean. That's what they're going to... They're probably listening right now for all the things that they want to fix.
They might be listening, yeah. But, that's... the way it is right now is that's exactly it. You meet the requirements this year for this raise, you do that raise, and you're done, and everything's fine. And next year, you might have to do something different. And by the way, next year, the regulators might have changed the rules again anyway.
Well, that's pretty much a given, because when we're operating on the grants and the contract
every
side
year.
And stuff, every year. And every state and every matching fund and every source of funds and all of that kind of thing comes through.
I wonder if we could just discuss it a little bit from the investor side.
Sure. Mm-hmm. We have 10 minutes. It's all yours.
I'd like to... You know, from the investor side, what do you want to invest in these crowdfunding offerings, and why would you, and those, what do you got to watch out for, and those kind of things. The reason this is all regulated so heavily is to protect the investors from crooks, you know, and that's what they think about down there all the time. John used to work down there, so he knows.
Yes,
what he's talking about.
I was.
With
a regulator enforcement.
No, I'm just the regulator.
Yeah. And so there's restrictions in here, like you got to qualify people and you got to qualify the company and you got to
do your due diligence.
And all that stuff. But like they always force you to say in all capital letters, this is risky and you will lose all your money. So every investor in a crowdfunding campaign of any kind should go in with that assumption. You are going to lose all your money.
And we tell that to any investor that's in an early stage tech startup. If you can't afford to lose it, don't invest it.
That's right.
There is no guarantee of returns.
That's right.
It's all on management's opinions. This is about the future. The future is uncertain. This is what we think is going to happen, but it may not.
Exactly. So you can do your due diligence, and you know, part of the process of having these really good profiles and good business plans and descriptions up on these websites is that. So you can do that. But also, like, for example, it might be a revenue share loan. Well, the owner of the company is basing that on their, you know, recent history and how the revenue is going now, but things change, you know.
History is not the future, and it does not necessarily continue in those.
Just keeps you out of jail.
Perfect. So even on the loan-based things, you know, these are risky propositions, but on the other hand, that's why you're getting 8% or 12% or 15% interest instead of zero, because you're willing to take on a little bit of that risk.
Well, and you're... As investors, and I screen a lot of companies for investors and things, I've been known to have to sit down and read the entire California Code of LLC regulations to figure out if somebody actually was still a valid LLC. But when we're sitting down there as investors, you, especially if you're just starting out being an angel investor or this is your first foray into this, you need to have a team around you that can advise you on, is the accounting right? The lawyer can look at the deal. You don't ever, as a newbie investor, go it alone. You need other angels to tell you, or you need qualified people around you that helps you screen the deals.
Okay, this is really interesting. I want to talk about two things with regards to this. The general subject you're talking about, due diligence or vetting of the opportunity, is who's doing it,
right?
And so with crowdfunding, generally you have somebody who's what they call the lead investor.
Right.
Okay, and this is somebody who you got to depend on to do all the things you're talking about.
Right.
Because you're new, you don't know that industry, you don't know the people.
You better know that lead investor and that they do their job.
Exactly. So what's happened over the last 3 years as this industry has evolved, very clear and obvious, is these lead investors are bringing deals, are vetting and qualifying these deals, and they've got all the lawyers and advisors and everybody and accountants to look at all this stuff and decide, yes, it's a reasonable deal, yes, it's a reasonable valuation, yes, it's a reasonable place for me to put my money. And then the great thing about crowdfunding is I can follow them.
Right.
So you can follow Mark Cuban. If you want to, you can follow. I'm partners.
If you aren't experienced in it and you don't have that team, you don't want to be the lead investor. You don't want to be the first one in the door.
I want to tell you a quick story just to illustrate this. We have a great little startup here in town called WedPix, and they have a photo sharing app for weddings, and it's taken off like a rocket. I mean, they get thousands and thousands of weddings a week using their thing. So I recommended to Justin Miller, who's the CEO, that we should do an AngelList crowdfunding round for part of his raise.
Okay.
And he agreed to do that. He didn't put his whole raise up there, but he put part of it up there, and for good reason, so he can get some publicity. He can and potentially find some new investors that he otherwise wouldn't have found. Well, lo and behold, we found a pretty darn good one of the sharks.
Right.
And she contacted me early on as when that listing went up on AngelList, and because I was one of the early investors, and she wanted to know my due diligence
right.
on the company before they went away and did their own. Okay, so he wound up raising that money quickly. He's got one of the sharks now as one of his investors, and everybody decided and happy about the whole thing. It would have never happened without this crowdfunding process being able to go
right.
forward.
Well, right.
One of the stories I share with my clients is one of the CEOs of one of the companies I was advising was acquiring another, was going to invest. He said, I've had my lawyers look at it. I've had my accountants look at it. He goes, but my gut says there's something. He goes, just go in, spend 3 days there, do the diligence. I called him like 3 hours later and said, we got to talk. And he goes, you need more time? I was like, no, I'm done. And he goes, that's not a good done. And yeah. I was like, no, it's not a good done. Because again, whoever's evaluating those companies needs the sophistication and the experience with those types of companies to be able to do the due diligence. In this case, he was trying to acquire a government contractor who had not obeyed any of the rules.
Whenever you're buying, right. whenever it's an equity thing, I 100% agree you need a really qualified lead investor before you get involved. When it's revenue share loans, I think there's a different story.
Right.
And here's what I think it is. I'm a customer for my favorite restaurant in town, and I won't mention who I'm talking about, but I think you know who I am.
Yeah.
In case you wonder, John's got this huge smile on his face. So.
Yeah. And I've had discussions with him about this idea. Okay, he opens a new restaurant every few years. He's been doing it ever since he got out of NC State, 15 years ago. And he's got a very profitable business. He's got a great formula.
Mm-hmm.
It costs him around $350,000 to open
right.
a new location. So he can crowdfund that from his 15,000 customers
great.
Like me that love the place, know he knows what he's doing. But I don't have to be an expert in the restaurant.
You've literally consumed your due diligence over these years.
Exactly.
And so that's it.
I was just going to say, yeah.
So in some cases, there'll be things like, my point is, you can have expertise and experience in things yourself that you can depend on. Part
great.
Of it, it's a risk. You're taking a risk, but you can use your own experience, your own gut reaction, your own knowledge of the person, it's a personal friend of yours, to decide if you're going to invest. It's more like a friends and family investment than it is like a professional equity investment. In those cases, this is another place where crowdfunding is going to work really
well
for small businesses because they're tapping into that fan base they
right.
have, wherever they might be.
Well, and it's kind of like what you're talking about is kind of on the when I do with my franchising clients. I want to franchise my business. It's like, well, you have 5 locations and they all operate differently. They're
right.
in a different type of location. Some are standalone. Some are in a mall, strip mall. So which model are you franchising? And and you start going down that where he obviously has the formula.
Yep.
He's got all those decisions. He replicates it. Where someone hasn't replicated that and they've sort of just started up almost 5 independent businesses with the same name, and they're run vastly
right.
differently. That is a different thing that they have to address before they can franchise.
Yep.
Same thing with crowdfunding. The guy that wants to franchise or crowdfund his next operation will have to say which one it's like. Where
mm-hmm.
this guy has the formula. He's got the secret sauce.
That's right.
Now
no
he just has
no
to find the right, team partners to run it because
exactly.
he can't duplicate himself.
Right.
So the last thing I want to mention on this subject since we're on it, you can the way these things work is you can have much smaller minimum investment amounts. For the people that come in, it might be $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, that kind of range. In fact, it's limited in the PACES Act. The most you can invest as a retail unaccredited investor is $5,000.
So, and that's kind of
in one company in 1 year.
And the accrediteds are like anything, they want.
They can, because the difference essentially between an accredited and unaccredited, as far as the government typically assumes, is the level of sophistication. Because high net worth individuals tend to have made multiple investments, they have the money that they can afford to lose it in theory, and those kind of things.
That's a theory, yeah.
Where the unaccredited, I would say it in theory because we've had a few high net worth individuals and clients that really couldn't afford it. But it's what information, what level of sophistication, and assuming that information is the differentiation. And usually the government says that's based on your net worth.
Yeah.
Over and above anything else.
And unfortunately, in 2008-09, after that financial crisis, they redefined what an accredited investor was because there were people I knew that met the definition
right.
that now they
don't.
Didn't.
Right. Right. So like somebody that's purely in all real estate, some of those type of guys
yep.
that didn't no longer meet the criteria as to that. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you guys for both being on the show. We have a website that everyone can go to. It's jobsnc.blogspot.com for more yep. information on this. And I want to thank Mark Easley Sr. and John Demers for being on here.
I'd like to get a real plug in
go
if Mark
it.
Can actually get the date, but I believe that on September 6th in the evening at
5:30.
There will be a gathering at the Frontier in Cary, and Benji Jones and Mark and maybe another person will be there discussing this in more detail and answering some questions to people. So if you want to learn more about this and actually have a real lawyer, not one playing a lawyer, that would be an event to go to. And you can learn about that at the website you just gave.
And the website again is jobsnc.blogspot.com. And thanks, guys, for being on the show today. And you're welcome back anytime to talk more about angel investing, about Rusty Bucket Kids, or any of the great projects
the great
you guys
projects
are involved
we go
in.
On. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. And until next time, everyone, stay focused on the important things, screening process, because sometimes Focused on Business would like to thank our underwriter, Close HR Connections. Ann Close of Close HR Connections has been on the show, and she is a great supporter of WCOM-FM and Focus on Business. Visit their website, closehrconnections.com. Focus on Business is underwritten by Focus Resources. Their website is focusresourcesinc.com. That's focusresourcesinc.com. If you would like to become an underwriter for Focus on Business or any of the WCOM FM LP 103.5 programs or the station, visit the WCOMFM.org website for information on underwriting shows, becoming an individual sponsor, becoming a Golden Voice sponsor, or how to volunteer with the station. That's WCOMFM.org. We're on the air because you care. And you underwrite our programs.
This is Lee Strickland of Focus Resources with today's Focus Point. If you are starting a business or want to grow your business, the starting point is your business's core. Now, the core I'm talking about is the concept, what business you're in, the problem you solve, the opportunity, which is the customer you target and the niche you serve, the resources, that's the funding, the skills, and other things that you need to serve the customer and do business. And finally, the entity or the business model that you're going to use to make money. These are the core foundational elements for getting your business started right and growing. If you have already started your business, it isn't too late to sit down and define these elements. You will be surprised at the impact it will have on your business. For more information on developing your core, go to FocusResourcesInc.com and click on Focus Points. And that's today's Focus Point.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life. And I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American. The men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly